Good morning and welcome to the Henry Raines Show, where you have the power to have your voice heard, to inform and become informed from local to global on the issues you care about most on your hometown morning talk show, wherever your hometown may be. I'm Robin Davis. I got Jim Delgado here in the studio with me again. It's Jim Delgado Wednesday. Henry Raines is on assignment, and we've got a little bit earlier than usual the captain, Matt Bruce, on the line. We're going to be going right into talking to Matt. Obviously, big news in his world. Good morning, Matt.
Hey,
Matt. Sorry, say good morning again. I not quite the expert on the boards yet.
Well, you know, practice.
I'm getting better than the first morning. Trust me.
Hey,
I have no idea how
bad
that
was. You're doing good. I remember from day one. Remember?
Oh yeah, back on the day when Henry was sick a couple weeks ago, and I had the wrong mic on, and it sounded like I was in a cave. And thankfully, I have really awesome listeners who are texting me and going, "Why do you sound like you're 10 feet away from the mic?" And then I realized, because I was 10 feet away from the mic.
Okay.
But Matt's helping me out a little bit, and he called me and called into the studio so we didn't have to call him. And obviously, Matt, big news.
Well, yeah, let's start with Mitt Romney. It's no surprise. He clinched the numerical numbers last night to be the Republican presidential candidate. The only question now that remains is how high is his total delegate count going to be? Now, for the Ron Paulsters that are out there, this was Ron Paul's home state. He got 12% of the vote. Romney got 68.9% of the vote in Texas. And I can tell you that I am hearing from some of my friends in Texas that they went to the polls, held their nose, and voted simply because they figured that this was the lesser of two evils. And that's kind of what we're going to see as we move on into the fall election. I really think that it's not necessarily about who the best candidates are. It's going to be about who the lesser is of the two evils.
Let's see. Matt, can you hear Jim?
No, not at all.
Bear with us a second, folks. He's going to switch mics.
Another button or something.
Well, the buttons are on right, but for some reason that mic was not picking up.
How about this?
Oh, there he is. I think
Jim.
I just heard him.
Matt, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. Nice to talk to you. I always affectionately call you Jimmy D.
You know what? You're not the only one. It's funny. A lot of people tend to do that. And what's the funniest thing is they used to call my dad that.
Yeah, well, that's where I got it from, because you told me one time when we were talking about the military and your dad. And by the way, thank you for your dad's service and for yours. And, of course, we remember them Memorial Day and all our great heroes that didn't come home.
Exactly. Matt, you said something interesting. Hold their nose. But how can you hold your nose for Ron Paul? I mean, he is the true definition of the Tea Party, the Libertarian Party, whatever you want to call it these days. I mean, how can you hold your nose for Ron Paul?
Well, here's how, and this is what's really astounding. Not to change the subject, but I need to drift over for a second to what's going on in Wisconsin and to talk about the role the Libertarians are playing up there. When would you ever think, Jim, that you would hear about the Libertarian Party emailing not only Republicans but their Libertarian people to get them out to canvass and campaign for the incumbent governor, Scott Walker? And, I mean, I've been getting email after email after email. The Libertarians have joined ranks, at least in Wisconsin, with the Republicans. Isn't that amazing?
But it is, but I don't think it's because of their political beliefs. I think it's because they just want to win.
Well, it is about political beliefs up there, because they've taken a line and they've drawn a line in the sand, and of course they're going pretty much at this when it comes to the unions, because what they're mad about up there is that the total union contribution that we can verify approaches $50 million, as far as going back to that first recall. Remember when they tried to recall the senators?
Right.
And now this one, they've got $50 million worth of union money, and you know how involved I am with the firefighters.
Yeah, I get, you know, Matt, it's funny you say it. I didn't find that number. I found a number that's just breaking the double digits. What I did find, though, was that there's an amount to Scott Walker you're talking about between $25 and $31 million. I didn't find the $50 million you're talking about, though.
It's a total number, and it is there, and you just have to do a little bit more research. I found it on Real Clear Politics and the articles that are in there. It's buried in amongst contributions. If you go in there and look at the Wisconsin race amongst the articles that are in there, based on the public records. But actually, Walker's raised more money than that. He's closer right now to about $35 million, and 90% of that money is coming from the outside. It's coming from a lot of these super PACs, as well as I mentioned, the Libertarians got involved in it. They're actually sending money, too, which I find very surprising.
I didn't know Libertarians had that kind of money.
Oh, they do. They do. they don't have the, I don't think they have a candidate that'll do anything, because if you hadn't heard, Gary Johnson, who got their nomination, is not going to get the blessing of the founding father, Ron Paul. Ron Paul is going to stick with the Republican side this time, primarily because of the future of his son, Rand Paul, the Republican senator.
Yeah, well, like I said, again, they want to win. I mean, I think that's when you put your ideological beliefs on the side and you say, look, I want to win.
And that's right.
I mean, it's fair, and, but it's politics. You know, it's all fair in politics, I guess, these days.
That's right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Robin.
I'm sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to step on you. See, I hate this, the lesser of two evils, and the only the candidate who's going to win, rather than, you know, if more people, I think, voted for the candidate they really wanted, we'd be able to break eventually, probably not in this election, but I think eventually we'd be able to break this, you know, two-party chokehold that they have on our country. I think we're seeing, I mean, it's not working. You know,
well,
it's
you're
awful.
Right. You're absolutely right. And here's the problem, and Jim knows what I'm talking about because Jim's been in the military. We have a creed that we live by, and that creed follows over into not only the fire service but also police and EMS. It's all about we. It's never about me. It's about we. And if more people thought about our country as we, all of us, and what's best for the country, we'd be a lot better off, and we just can't seem to get rid of this constant infighting that's out there. And, Jim, I don't know what the answer is, but I'll tell you what. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It's time to flush the toilet, vote the bums out, and start over.
You know, I don't tend to disagree on with you on that part. You know, and we're going to get back to the same thing we always talk about is, you know, campaign finance reform.
Oh, God, yeah.
Who's really running? And let's be honest. Let's say you're a good – look, I don't know anybody – that doesn't have a skeleton in their closet. And to go through a brutal race and have everything you've done ever come back and slap you in the face. I mean, if anybody looked at my, you know, look, I was no angel. Between 16 and 20 years old was probably, or 19 years old was probably the worst time of my life ever.
Sowed your oats.
Right, but there's enough evil or demons in those 3 years that I would never, ever want to put my family through, you know, what I did 20-something years ago.
Sure, but here's what I would do in your case, Jim, and more people need to think about this. I've known you for about the last, I'd say, 10 years.
Right.
And in that time, I've learned to respect you. I've worked with you in some different projects. I've been on television with you and different things that we've done together. We've talked about different things, and we respectfully agree to disagree on matters, and we agree on other matters. When it comes to the veterans, I believe we agree totally.
I think 100%.
Because of our positions.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, we work together,
right.
And we don't sit there and yell and scream at each other. We've never done that, and that's not the way to get anything done. I'm sorry. It's got to be done in an intelligent,
right,
adult setting, and that's what these people sometimes don't seem to understand. There was a rant on TV this morning. I forget where it was. It was some state legislature somewhere. A senator got up there, state senator in one of the states, talking about tax increases. Whatever state was going to raise. It was Illinois. It was Illinois, and a Republican state senator got up there with a legislative bill, and it was loosely bound. It wasn't held at all. It was just a bunch of pages put together, about 200 or 300 pages. He got up there, started screaming and hollering, threw the thing all over the place. I mean, is that the way to solve our problems?
I bet you anything that after that he raised a lot of money.
Probably.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, that's just not the way to get it done.
But also with that comes that the hated word, which I don't hate. I'll be honest with you. The art of compromise. Look, as a lawyer, I understand one thing.
Sure.
When you put your cards on the table and the other side puts their cards on the table, you come to an amicable resolution. If you cannot come to a resolution, you go in front of the judge. He will make the resolution. But there's always compromise involved.
Nobody, and after all, what's a plea bargain, Jim? Isn't that a compromise?
It's the great what's a marriage, man? A marriage,
sure,
is a compromise. I mean, let's break it down to the most the most brutal and the hardest of all is a marriage. You get two different people from two different worlds, completely different, and all of a sudden, one day you say, I do, and now it's like, okay, now I have to share all my toys, all my money, all my beliefs with you. Oh, and I have to raise some children, knowing that you got to share. I mean, that is hard. You know, and I think that's what's lost is that if you want 10, I want 1, somewhere in the middle we're going to have to compromise because whoever's president is not president of 150 million people, the president of 300 million people.
That's right.
And I think that's where we're kind of off. And if our politicians could have the conversation that we're having, I think it'll be. But you know what? But at the, like I said, though, it's what can I say? How bombastic can I be? to raise money, what kind of money can I get behind me? Not that I believe in the people who are giving me money, and not that I should be responsible for what they're doing, but I need their money.
You're right.
You know, and I think that that's kind of the downfall.
Yep,
and it's unfortunate, but I guess it is what it is until we learn a lesson. And history says those lessons could be pretty brutal if we don't.
Absolutely.
There's a I'm going to kind of jump here, Matt. We didn't talk about this in advance, but there's a clip I'm going to play here from former Senator Alan Simpson, who's a Republican from Wyoming. And it's a little bit quiet, and I'm hoping it's actually going to play loud enough. Bear with me.
Well, I think my party and I have different views on a lot of things.
Yeah, unfortunately, for some reason, the audio on that, even on the web, is just very late. But what he said, I guess I'm known as a rhino now, which means a Republican in name only, because I guess of social views, perhaps, or common sense would be another one which seems to escape members of our party. For heaven's sake, you have Grover Norquist wandering the earth in his white robes saying that if you raise taxes one penny, he'll defeat you. He can't murder you. He can't burn your house. The only thing he can do to you as an elected official is defeat you for re-election. And if that means more to you than your country, when we need patriots to come out in a situation when we're in extremity, you shouldn't even be in Congress. And he had some other comments about, you know, the bipartisan bickering and how he's now being called out as a rhino because, heaven forbid, he said we should be working together to to fix the problems, not fighting each other.
That's true. And Grover Norquist is a radical, make no doubt about it. He is extremely hard right. And when it comes to the taxes, his little tax gimmick that he wanted the members of Congress running for re-election, senators and congressmen, to sign, they're not doing it this time around. Remember last time, Jim?
Yeah.
I guess about maybe 25-30% of them did. Not this time.
Robin brought that up last week. I was very surprised. And what is the thinking behind that? Do they not? Is he not as powerful as he used to be, or what's going on?
Well, here's the thinking behind it. We all know somewhere along the line we're going to have to pay the price. We're going to have to pay the pauper. Now, the question is, what kind of taxes are we going to have to pay, additional taxes? Because we've got to cut our spending. Somewhere along the line we've got to cut our spending. And if we just simply targeted the waste, it's estimated up to 10% of every government agency has got at least that much waste in it. So let's just say we do 5% straight across the board, and the next president, whether it's Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, chooses to do that for openers. Now you've got to, and that wouldn't be enough to balance the budget. It would lower the deficit a little, but it would certainly not lower the budget, balance the budget rather. So now you've got to turn around, and you've got to go back in there and say, okay, are we going to raise the gas tax? Are we going to raise the are we going to change the income tax? Are we going to make it a flat tax? Are we going to make it some sort of different tax scale? What are we going to do there? Because we all know that something's got to happen. And even in the Simpson-Bowles commission that they put together that the president chose not to do anything about, they talked about a modest tax increase. And, again, I don't know about you, Jim, but when I sit there and I hear about Alex Rodriguez, $124 million for, what, 10 years or 5 years or whatever the hell his contract was, and I hear about these athletes. Do you know, as well as I do, when they go out and create these foundations for kids and all that, even though they're nice charities and all that, they're trying to lower their money so that they'll lower their revenue so they don't have to pay the taxes on it.
Well, absolutely.
So let's just cut the nonsense and say, listen, if you make, and I'm not talking about gross, I'm talking about if you net $1 million a year, it's time for you to pay more money, period. End of story, no discussion.
Wow.
I think even if you're grossing $1 million a year, you should probably be paying a little more.
Well, they're not going to do it on gross because businesses, believe it or not, Robin, and Jim can tell you this, that gross $1 million, write their incomes off just on legitimate expenses.
Oh, no, I'm talking people. Yeah,
right.
I'm talking if you're making...
Right.
If you're taking home $1 million as your salary,
right?
Sure.
But $1 million salary is not as big as it really sounds. Because
and when these people talk about the millionaire tax and the Republicans, you know, some of them go, "Well, we can't do this, we can't do that." No, you're wrong. You can do that. They're the ones that have got the money. And guess what? Most of them say, I've talked to them. There's Jim right in our backyard, Lakewood Ranch, okay, where I used to live.
Right.
They're all over the place in there, and they have no problem at all paying a little extra if they have to try to help out the country, because it's not about a president. And by the way, we'll get into that in a minute. It's not about a president. It's about the country and what's best for the country.
I agree. And most small businesses don't make $1 million. You know, it's funny when people talk about small business, not really talking about the small business like mine and almost everybody I know. They're talking about people, corporations, just under 500 employees, who are basically offshoots of large corporations, and that's not really a small business like mine. I mean, we take a hit. I mean, we take a hit across the board. But at the same time, I feel fortunate. You know, I look at my tax a little differently. I feel fortunate that I can pay that type of tax in. It's not that I don't like it. It's not that I cringe. It's not that I look at Mr. FICA and I smile. But I know that, you know what, I like the roads. I like libraries. I like law enforcement. I like the fact that I can call fire department if my house is on fire.
Sure.
I like the fact that they check my meat. I like the fact that my planes are safe. I mean, I look at it from a different perspective as, you know what, thank God that I have these things. Because I've lived in other countries, and there's a direct correlation between your roads and your economic system.
And picture this for a minute, Robin and Jim. Up in Pasco County, the firefighters have turned down the contract that was negotiated for them that they originally approved through a mediator last October. And the reason they've turned it down is because, and I've never heard of such a thing, in Pasco County, half of the residents that live in the rural areas don't pay any ad valorem or fire tax at all, and the firefighters said, hey, this isn't fair. You're going to have to raise the taxes on half the people that are paying the tax and the other half aren't? Uh-huh. How do you like that? I never heard of such a thing.
I think that's awesome. You know, good for them, standing up and pointing out the flaws.
Now, Matt, I know you're saying these things here. Do you say that when you speak? Do you say these things? Do you say here when you speak?
I most certainly do, and a lot of times I get booed.
Oh, okay. Well,
as a matter of fact, I've said it before in front of the firefighters, the unions, when I've gone to some of their meetings as a member emeritus and talked to them about the word concessions. You've got to learn concessions. But when you get into the issues, and if you really do your research, like I spoke up in Pasco County and found out about what was going on up there, the 912 group that was up there and the libertarian group that I was speaking in front of, because they were all met together in one particular group, they booed me to begin with. And I said, now, wait a minute. Is it fair for you to not pay fire taxes when you need to have the service and these firefighters are desperately trying to not have the taxes raised, but they want to make it fair for everybody, and it would actually lower people's taxes that have been paying the 50% for quite a while, and you people would come in at the bottom end of the fold, and maybe your taxes would not have to be raised again, period.
Right. Do you think a product of that is the way that we've always let me take it back. If my experience is, if you ask an American citizen about where do your tax dollars go, they give you all the very negative stuff, you know, what they're being told. If you ask somebody from Europe where do your taxes go, they pay higher taxes. But what the difference is, not that it's better or worse, the difference is they tell you where their tax dollars go. Well, my education, my health care, my this, my that. Now, they don't like it. They don't like the amount of money. But at least when they talk about their taxes, they know where it goes. Where I don't think most American citizens know where their tax dollars go.
No, they don't pay attention. It's just like right now, the majority of the electorate is really not paying attention to what's going on. They're just sitting back and just absorbing what's being said, but they're not really getting involved in anything. And some of them may not. You know, the group that's hurt the hardest right now out there is the youth, the young folks that can't find a job. And I've talked to a lot of them. I'm sure you have too, and Robin, I'm sure you have as well, that they're sitting there going, why should I vote? Why should I even vote? Why should I register? Some of them aren't registered because, you know, they're just now turning the age or whatever. But they talk about, why should I even register? What good is it going to do me? I can't afford to pay my loan. I can't this. I can't that. Blah, 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 blah. Our vote doesn't matter because they understand the senior citizens are the largest voting bloc in the state of Florida, and they are.
Yeah.
And I tell them, I said, well, listen, do you remember the year 2000? Well, sort of. What about such?
Well, you got to remember, they were in elementary school.
Yeah, I said, if 500 kids of your age that were eligible to vote had voted one way or another, it either would have A, given George Bush a larger victory, or B, made Al Gore the president of the United States. And you're telling me your vote doesn't count?
Right. No, I agree. I think we agree on that so far. Robin,
I have three adult kids and only one's registered to vote at this point. And now I'm at the point, one just turned 18 in her defense, so she's not, literally like weeks ago. But I'm at the point where my goal is to get the other two, those last two registered and point out to them. The 21-year-old has just started to get it, and he's like, I got to vote. You know, this is his first presidential election, and he's really paying attention because he's looking at going into med school or journalism. And he's like, oh, I got to look at the one that's going to pay the loans off. And I'm like, but that's a sad choice and I even told him, I said, sit down and really think it through. Don't go into something just because it's going to pay the bills.
Yeah.
But that's a choice these kids are forced with. I have a sister who just went back to college. It was her only choice because she could not get a job to pay her loans.
Do you know what's fixing to happen in July if this do-nothing Congress does nothing?
What's that, Matt?
the student loan interest rate goes up double.
Yeah,
3.4 to 6.8, double on July the 1st.
That's me.
And Dennis Malley from the Bradenton
that,
Times.
What do you mean, that's you? I thought you would have paid yours off by now.
Oh, God,
are you still paying, Jim?
I took a six-figure loan.
Okay,
six-figure loan.
Well, no wonder you're driving that BMW.
I do not drive a BMW.
I know, I'm just picking on you.
Yeah, well, you know, I wanted to go to school. I wanted to go to law school. My parents helped me out with undergrad. They helped me with my master's. But my student loan is only law school. I was lucky that it was only law school.
You'd have been in the multi-six.
I would have been like a doctor.
How fair, you know, let's talk about the word fair for a minute, because I'm so sick and tired of hearing this fair shot, fair play, all this stuff. Let's talk about fair in terms of common sense. How fair is it to 50% of the workforce that can't find a job, when you're talking about the youth vote, the recent college graduates that are out there, to turn around and jack up their interest rate by double because of a bunch of gridlock in Congress? How fair is that?
Yeah,
it's not. You're starting to sound like a progressive, Matt. You're scaring me.
And as a matter of fact, we might have a point of contention right here. I truly believe that there's two things that should be free. One is we should have free education, not just K through 12, but I believe the only thing stopping you from going to medical school should be your brain. Because I've known a lot of people I met in law school, the majority, not all of them. I was in the minority. The majority of the people there, their parents were basically writing the check. Very few of us were there basically struggling just to stay in school. I know a lot of people, they just couldn't go to school because they couldn't afford it. They had to start working early.
Well, I don't disagree with you at all, Jim, and I'll tell you how we can pay for that. And you know as well as I do, it's called join the military. You'll get an education, whatever it is that you're eligible to do.
Okay. Yeah, that's what paid. I got $10,000 out of that one.
You bet.
Every penny counts when you're paying for school. Every
penny
counts.
And you know, just because you joined the military, guys, doesn't mean you're going to go off to war. You ever heard of the Coast Guard?
Yeah.
And the reserves? I mean, they don't all go over and get in the combat zone.
No, that's not true. My cousin is an active reservist right now. He's done two tours, one in Afghanistan, one at Gitmo. My uncle.
Yeah, but I'm saying they all don't go over there.
No, but the reserves doesn't mean you're staying home. But Matt, we gotta move on here. Real quick, you have a couple of announcements that are big news for you, and then also tell us where we can catch the Captain's America show.
Absolutely. I found out yesterday that I'm going to be working with the Heritage Foundation. That's the number one conservative think tank in the United States at the Republican National Convention. I'm going to be set up to broadcast live from the Tampa Convention Center right around the corner from the Tampa Bay Times Forum, St. Pete Tampa Bay Times Forum. And we're going to be broadcasting on in their communications bus, which is a big fold-out deal. It's called the Heritage Bus. And red, white, and blue painted all over, all that good stuff, which is great. We'll be there all 4 days of the convention. And also, there's a book coming out, hopefully by Christmas time, that's going to be called The Captain's America. That's all I can say about it right now. People can pretty much figure out what it's going to be about. It's not just about me, but it is about a whole bunch of wees.
I think you might be getting a mention in there, Matt Bruce.
Well, yeah, but it's going to mention a lot of good guys that... from the military on up to September 11th, a lot of good guys that died serving their country, which I'm going to pay honor to.
But speaking of that, Matt, do we have a list? Is there a list available or is known how many first responders are passing away from cancer and they're getting no medical attention at all?
As a matter of fact, there is. The Fire Department of New York has been keeping a list for some time, along with the State of New York Fire Marshal's Office, with people that have come down with respiratory illnesses. And, Jim, it's a tragedy and a travesty when this country has lost another 500 since September 11th that have died because of the carcinogens they sucked in. And it's not just first responders. We're talking about Salvation Army volunteers, Red Cross, steel workers. I mean, we've lost another 500 people on top of the almost 3,000 we lost.
Even Donna Summer, there's talk that she lived right near and died. If you remember, she died of lung cancer quite recently, and there has been a question raised for a non-smoker who, you know, she took care of her health. Was it, you know, I'm sure that this will be up for debate for the rest of our natural lives, but they're talking about, you know, what caused it. Is it possible that what she inhaled that morning, because she had an apartment in Manhattan, she was very close to what was going on, and even with your windows closed, you were inhaling stuff. And now they're looking at how many civilians, how many people who weren't actually right there might be affected in the long term. Because here we are, you know, 10, 12, 15 years later, and here's a woman who never smoked, did take care of herself, fairly young. She was 63, and she died of lung cancer, but she was right there near the centers, the towers that morning.
Yep, and it's unfortunately happening all too much, as well as you well know, Jim, Agent Orange with the Vietnam vets. A lot of claims have been denied over the years.
Let me tell you, my father suffers with headaches. You know, he went to Vietnam 18 months there, came back, luckily, Army Corps of Engineer, without a scratch, which is pretty fortunate. Served another 20-something years in the military, retired a command sergeant major, and has dealt with headaches every day of his life since.
Hey, Matt, tell us where we can hear your show before we go to break.
Well, I'm on 99.9 WXJB-FM Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. They can't hear us on the Internet yet because we're still working on getting that extra computer up there. Plus, we're increasing our power. We're going to 25,000 watts from the 2,500 that we're at, which will greatly increase the signal. But they can go to the captainsamerica.talkspot.com, the captainsamerica.talkspot.com, to find out all the different ways to hear me multiple times during the day.
Just in case this was not enough Captain's America for you this morning, again, say your website, that website one more time, Matt, where we can find you.
TheCaptainsAmerica.talkspot.com. And, Jim, again, thank you for your service. Thank you for your dad's service. To all the veterans that are listening, Memorial Day, welcome home, brothers.
Matt, it's always a pleasure.
Matt, thank you very much. I appreciate all your help this morning, and we're going to go to break. And, of course, we'll talk to Matt next Wednesday, and you can hear him on his own show on Captain's America.
God bless America.
Thank you, Matt.
You're listening to AM 1490, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
The Village of the Arts, located just south of downtown Bradenton, is home to Florida's largest and most vibrant community of artists. There's always something exciting going on, and you can find out more at villageofthearts.com or thevillagemagazine.net. Better yet, stop by in person and check out these featured artisans.
Sweet's Bakehouse is now serving breakfast and lunch daily and brunch on Sunday. Visit us for everything from fresh bread to wedding cake.
Plato's Gallery showcases art of all mediums. Stop by our open house every Friday and Saturday to meet the artists, listen to live music, and enjoy good conversation.
Crest Desire is an exciting contemporary fashion boutique featuring unique clothing, accessories, and jewelry. One-of-a-kind, hand-painted fabulous fashions for women of all ages.
Boom Studios, unique handmade silver and stone jewelry and accessories.
Let's face it, getting any real results from your investments right now is tough. Let's forget the money managers, the brokers, and the politicians for the moment, and let's talk solutions. Owning property in beautiful Costa Rica puts you in the world's fastest-growing economy, paying 0.25% in property tax, enjoying a low cost of living, and a lifestyle that is only matched by the spectacular climate. You may have wondered how to safely buy land in other countries. Listen to this station Tuesdays at noon or learn more at rescuemyfuture.com.
The Village of the Arts, located just south of downtown Bradenton, is home to Florida's largest and most vibrant community of artists. There's always something exciting going on, and you can find out more at villageofthearts.com or thevillagemagazine.net. Better yet, stop by in person and check out these featured artisans.
Hi, this is Lorraine from Down's Dining House. Join us for lunch daily, Friday tea nights, and Saturday homestyle dinners.
Village Voices focuses on literary art, carrying books written by Florida authors only. As headquarters for the Florida Writers Association, we offer office services from writing, editing, and publishing.
F8 Unique Photography Gallery. Classes and workshops, commercial photography and graphic design, and monthly exhibitions by feature photographers from Florida and beyond.
Hi, this is Karen Klosky from Six Oaks, a salon-style gallery in the South Village. Come join us for one of our jam sessions under the oaks in the backyard.
People have the power.
And welcome back to the Henry Raines Show on AM 1490, WWPR. We'll take your calls here in the studio, 941-745-1490. We also have toll-free, 888-761-1490. If you're calling from out of the area, Jim Delgado in the studio, and I'm Robin Davis. And we're actually going to revisit a story that Henry and I talked about, I believe it was last week. The minister in, his name is Pastor Charles Worley. A lot of outrage over Pastor Worley's comments, and I'm going to switch over here real quick and play the audio for those of you who may have missed it, although I'm wondering how you could have missed it. This has been all over the news. This is the gentleman who shared with us his solution for, as he puts it, the gay problem. And bear with me as the video's coming up. Sorry. This also, you know, this came in on the tail of the vote in North Carolina to define marriage as one woman and one man, and this was Pastor Worley's comments.
President Obama's
after the commercial.
So much.
The iPad is thinking like the Commodore 64 this morning in a show of solidarity. I'm going to play the comments in a moment, but actually after all of the public outrage, all of the public commentary, when Pastor Worley went back to his pulpit the following Sunday, he got a standing ovation from the members of his church. Now, my question is, how do you stand in a church, in a monument to Christianity, and applaud a man who called for basically another Holocaust, you know, concentration camps for homosexuals? How do you justify in your own head, in your own mind, in your own religion?
Well, it's a complete...
How do you call that Christianity?
It's a complete lack of understanding of true Christianity. You know, it's like somebody told me once, you know, they take pieces of the Bible that they like, and the pieces of the Bible and the ones that they don't like, they never talk about it. So basically, the Bible's being rewritten, I don't know how many times, comes from it's a compilation of, 19 canons or whatever the amount is, and you pick what you want. I mean, you can stone your children. I mean,
yes.
There's a lot of things in there that are pretty brutal.
I tease my children about the passages. I think it's either Deuteronomy or Leviticus that tells me when I'm allowed to stone them.
Yeah. What's funny is when I tell people, oh, you know, the Quran is, I say, well, have you ever read your Christian Bible? And the answer usually is no. You know, they go in there and they rely on the pastor telling what's in there. And like I said, they pick the lines they want. But to me, it's a true lack of understanding of compassion and who Jesus, assuming you believe in Jesus Christ or you believe, assuming these things, there is no way you could ever hate anybody, even the most evil person. There's no way you could ever hate them.
Right. Jesus talked about forgiveness and love, not
period.
Hate. And, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to play the audio, but he had called for, his solution was to set up a pen, an electrified fence, and put all the homosexuals inside the pen, and then there'll be no more gay people. And, you know, I had to laugh because I'm like, really, if you want to stop the proliferation of gay babies, you should probably take it up with the straight people who are having them, but, you know, that's just my thing. We have a caller. Let's see here.
Yeah, good morning.
You're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just would like to point out that Christianity has pretty much been responsible for a lot of the bloodshed for the last 2,000 years, whether it's against Jews or Muslims or Druids or whatever. You know, Christianity has always had the attitude of, destroy whatever they don't agree with.
Yeah, and let's not forget, how long did it take the Pope to make up his mind or decide whether the indigenous people of the Americas had souls or not, so we could either slaughter them, enslave them, or how to treat them? How many, by the time he made up his mind that they had souls, it was too late. They were almost extinct.
Well,
yeah, it was like convert them or kill them, one of the two.
We see, like, we gloss over that, or we'll say, you know what, that was back then, that's not now. What's changed, really? Think about it. What's really changed?
Nothing. They just that's why I'm pointing out that Christianity has just been responsible for nothing but misery for the past 2,000 years.
Well, there is some good stuff. There is some good stuff. I mean, I am not a churchgoer. I'm not going to really say what I am, but I work with a lot of church groups because they help a lot of people that need it. So you know, it's not all of them. It's some of these evangelical, these Bible bite, the Bible Belt stuff kind of it scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, and by the way, Jimmy, I wanted to tell you, I was thinking about what we were talking about last week about everybody having to join the military.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, if you're going to make all of us join the military, then we're going to sabotage it, man.
Well, but you know what? But that might. And what is wrong with that, though?
Let's turn it into a peaceful organization.
It's not sabotaging. It's bringing your beliefs to them. I don't think that's sabotaging. I think that's bringing your beliefs to them.
You know, like say they're waiting for us to bring up the supplies or whatever. We'll just be a little slow at it, man.
Believe it or not, I can tell you what was going to happen. I'll tell you, baby. Don't underestimate that breaking down process in basic training.
they make you a little crazy in there.
Let me tell you, by the time I consider myself a strong-minded person. 8 weeks after 8 weeks of basic training, I would kill for that guy. It took me about 8 years to kind of settle down and say, okay, this is real life. Now, it's an interesting breaking down, brainwashing, which has to be done for that purpose, but it's a very interesting dynamic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know enough.
It's not for the weak, that's for sure.
I was not able to go into the military, but I come from a serious military family. Yeah. Name a branch, name a war, name a time of peace, man. We've been there, and you know, we've done that, and I've talked to them, and, yeah, the military will change your life during those 8 weeks.
I would recruit
I think I'd make them sorry they ever had me.
But you know what? But to be honest with you, I think the military needs more just, well, they have a lot of regular people, and I enjoyed that. As a matter of fact, the person who first started putting these liberal thoughts into my head was in the military. What's funny, it was in the military.
Well, I think people forget that just because you're in the military, you're not conservative. It doesn't make you a conservative.
No,
it doesn't. My grandfather, a decorated World War II veteran, Battle of the Bulge, Purple Heart, I got a story a mile long on him. You know, I'm sorry. And he was very devout Catholic. Yeah. And he was as liberal as the day is long when it came to this stuff. He did what he had to do. He went in, he did his service because it was what you did and it was his responsibility. But as a good Christian, he spent the rest of his life trying to make up for what he did in the military. Yeah. He didn't see it as something to be glorified. He saw it as, I had to shoot people. I had to aim a gun at other men. And how do I go about living my life to make up for what I had to do by being a better person? So I don't think it makes you bloodthirsty or gun happy or conservative just because you're in the military.
I think
for some people it will make you a better person. He felt that way when he informed my uncle that his choices were the military or likely a little time in jail, and my uncle came out a better man for it. But you know what? He put him in the Coast Guard. He said, "I want you to go in the Coast Guard and learn to serve other people."
Yeah. The value of learning to wake up every day no matter what, learning to do your job no matter what, learning to work as a team no matter what, learning to care about somebody else besides yourself no matter what. Very interesting lessons I learned. You know, I enjoyed it. The only part that sucked was I had to cut my hair and I had to listen to some idiot tell me what to do. But
what is it about your law firm and the hair, man?
Why?
You guys are a little into your hair.
No, I just, I have it, so I don't need to be bald. You know who says that bald or not bald is okay? Guys with hair.
I'm not even sure how. We went from military to hair. Augie, thanks for calling in.
All right, man.
That wasn't Augie.
Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. I thought that was Augie for a second. My mistake. I am not as good at recognizing the voices, and I did not think to have that person, you know, identify themselves. I am like tongue-tied this morning, folks. I am really sorry. We went from Pastor Worley into the military. It is something that's come up, over and over again. You know, obviously, military is a big deal. Romney took Memorial Day as an opportunity to talk about how shrinking the military was a bad thing. Obama got in trouble for making comments about, Vietnam. We have a very strange relationship with our military here in this country.
I think Romney has a stranger relationship. Well, nobody's, you know how many deferments he took?
I don't know that number. I know he did take them, but I have a feeling you know the number.
From 65 to 71, between ministerial deferments, religious deferments, and academic deferments for 6 years. I think the biggest one was 30-month gap, but basically he was ineligible, or eligible, but deferments from 65 to 71, and was a protester for the Vietnam War, not against it, but spent his time in France.
So he spent time protesting
To support the war, yet never, ever win it. And Obama, just in case you guys think, well, so did Obama, he was too young. It doesn't apply. So what he would have done or not have done is really not an issue because we will never know.
He was, he was not of the right age during any draft.
He's only a few years older than me.
Yeah, I think he's, 48?
Yes, something like that. Yeah, under 50. But he took deferments, and he lived in a palace in France. There's beautiful pictures of riding a bicycle in France.
We need to go back to that. However, first, we have a caller. You're live on the air.
Hey, Robin. It's Augie, the guy you thought.
This
you were
is Augie. I apologize.
Don't apologize. The reason you probably thought that is we had that I helped initiate that conversation last week, I believe, with Jim and took his side. I still take his side and the issue of being a stakeholder in the country. But the real thing is with people on military is the kind of military we have now is the outcome of people not taking part in their government public service. We just don't care about our government. We think we can just go about our business and not pay a price for ignoring it, being asleep.
Hey, I have a question for you. A poll just came out, I believe it was yesterday or day before yesterday, that veterans are in support, that Romney leads veteran by 24 percentage points. And my question to you is, based on the fact that he took out basically from was eligible but did not serve due to deferments or religious deferments between 65 and 71, protested for the war, yet never served, how does somebody like that, or is it just about the fact that these guys are, I think that the breakdown was most of them were over 50 and veterans?
You're talking about the veterans of foreign wars?
I'm just talking about veterans in general. It wasn't
in
that
general,
specific.
Yeah. People out of service, basically, you're talking about.
That's what it seemed to be.
It's veterans. It's people who are out of the service now, and it was military vet support around.
I mean, you've got recycled veterans, too, and that's kind of why I'm asking that question.
Right.
I think the returning veterans from the war, about a third of them, think these last two wars were a huge mistake and would have opposed it. In the case of Vietnam, that would be an interesting number as to Vietnam itself. I think the veteran to listen to as to what they believe in or whatever is a veteran who was in the particular war they were in. That goes to the point that I was going to make about we love to refer to the greatest generation. This country wants to praise, and what was that greatest generation? It was World War II.
Right.
Why was it a great generation? Because it included the people. They were part of World War II. They paid taxes. They paid for the war. They sacrificed. They rationed their food.
The war tax, Augie. Where's our war tax now?
There isn't one.
That's the
problem. We listen to a leader tell the people, "Well, don't go out and spend your money. Just like nothing went on. After, be the patriot and spend your money." Right. And keep the economy going. Bring us out of this depression or recession, he claimed at that time.
Right.
This is the pathetic position we've come to, that we honor people who dodged the draft, in the case of George Bush Jr., not his father, and these people who are hypocrites to the issue of real patriotism. Then they put in a thing called the Patriot Act, which takes away everyone's right if they disagree with the direction of the government. The only way you can really affect the direction of this government is take part in public service, and I think a national public service draft is the answer. You have to serve a certain time in the military out of 2 years, either 2 years or less, depending on what else you required to do, can do. You can go into hospital work, all kinds of things. Did it in World War II, and all kinds of COs, conscientious objectors, do that. And just excusing yourself, well, I'm protecting my children by being against this, or I'm for this and I'm for that, and thump your chest with self-righteousness is just apathy and hypocrisy compounded. So it's just a terrible, terrible thing.
Hey, Augie, thanks. Hey, Augie, I got to wrap it up. I got another caller waiting, but
sure,
thank
okay,
you very much for your thoughts. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Augie. Appreciate it. All right. Who's next?
Caller, you're live on the air.
Caller?
Hello? Oh, seems like we lost them. Hello?
I want to wait.
Unfortunately, sometimes I think we got them coming back here. Hold on. Caller, you're live on the air.
Good morning.
What's up, Lawrence? How are you doing today?
Fine. Thank you for asking. Counselor, what is your opinion on Bill Clinton's lack of service?
He also did the same thing. He took deferments, which is kind of my point. I didn't come around to it. I mean, the conservative or the right wing hated Clinton for taking deferments, but they okay with Romney taking. And that's my whole point, Lawrence. Is the hypocrisy? Me myself, I don't care what people do.
Well, then why are you bringing
it
up?
No, because my point exactly. Because it's very shocking to me that we apply a double standard. In other words, Clinton took Clinton took deferments, and it's a bad thing. Romney takes deferments, and it's a good thing. And I never understood how we could, it's like, well, I like it when my party does it, and I don't like it when that party does it. And we're all responsible for it, and we all do it. And that, to me, is basically the ironic part, is that we all do it, and we make an argument each time to defend our position, as opposed to just saying either who cares or it is what it is.
I got you on that one, and eat crow the rest of the day.
I don't know why I'm eating crow. I didn't defend him.
Lawrence, you're going to have to repeat yourself because I had the you were talking over Jim, so I turned you down. But now you can. Now it's your turn. Say what you had to say.
Oh, thank you for giving me back my turn. I was pointing out the hypocrisy, Counselor.
No, I was pointing out
you're jumping all over George Bush and going back, but
you
skipped over Bill Clinton, and I just pointed out how hypocritical Augie and all of your ilk are.
Okay, all right. I don't think it was hypocritical because my point was well made.
And you did make the point when given a chance.
Sure.
And it is wrong.
Oh, and by the way, I'm going to disagree with Augie on this. Draft dodging is a very interesting phrase. I consider draft dodging is when you get your number and it's time for you to serve, and basically you leave the country. Some people are going to disagree with me. That's fine. Deferments were legal. If you take a deferment, you take a deferment. Good or bad, it just is. Everybody has to make up their own choice. My point was, how is it that we're okay with Romney doing it, but we weren't okay with Bill? And they called Bill a draft dodger. Now, Bush was not a draft dodger. He went into the National Guard, got a really cool job, went maybe, according to some sources, might have been AWOL for a while, mm-hmm. And no harm came to him. That's what I'm saying. We're hypocritical. When it's our side doing it, we're okay with it. When it's the other side doing it, we're not okay with it. Ronald Reagan was, I think, a second lieutenant. He made films for the military.
Yes,
that was part of his early film career.
Yeah, he was.
H.W. Was a veteran. The Kennedys.
The Kennedys very much believed in voluntary
service. They lost one of their sons.
That was Joe.
Yeah,
Joe Jr. was lost in the Korean War.
And as a matter of fact, this is going to be the first time ever on the presidential ticket on either Democrat or Republican that a non-military or somebody who has never served is the first time that a veteran is not up.
Somewhere in the presidential.
Very interesting. And I don't care. To be honest with you, I don't care what somebody does.
And I don't think serving in the military or not serving in the military makes you a good person or a bad person.
Right.
I don't think that it should be, oh, you're not a veteran, so you don't deserve to be president. But if you're going to sit here and talk about military stuff and you deferred for 6 years,
right.
or
that
Clinton,
was my point
even
exactly.
Clinton was wrong. Lawrence is saying we're playing partisan games. No, Clinton was just as wrong. And this is that thing you talked about. No matter what you did, it is going to come back up. The nonsense over Clinton.
Right.
And smoking a joint. Oh, my, I didn't inhale. Who cares? Honestly, who cares at this point?
That's what I mean. I mean, look, we all get to who we are by making... Look, I am the person I am because of the mistakes I made. I am not here because of my successes. You learn very little from success. What you learn is...
some dumb stuff.
Yeah, me too. You learn from your failures, and that's who you become who you are. And look, if somebody did that 20, 30 years ago, that's fine. But just don't come today and tell me that it was okay. Like, what you do, you say, look, that's who I was. And the answer is always easy. That's who I was 20 years ago. That's who I was 30 years ago. Either I've evolved or I'm still like that.
Now, if you're still like that, let's talk about what you did in the last 5-10 years. And some of it's the media. Our media is so scandal hungry. You know, there's this whole thing going around. Bill Clinton posed with porn stars. Okay.
So what's new? I don't get it.
He was at an event. Some wholly, fully dressed women in ball gowns came up, asked for a picture. One of them happens to be a porn star. She tweeted the photo on the account that she also posts promotions for her porn movies. Poor choice on her part. And this is huge news that Clinton posed with porn. I'm like, who cares? He was sitting at dinner and posed with people. I'd take my picture with Bill Clinton if I saw him.
Total non-issue. Just like it was a non-issue when... some of the Republicans come out that they're gay, and so I think it's a total.
Who cares?
So what? My whole point is, so what?
Nobody asks about my straight people's sex life. We don't need to know about gay people's sex life.
I just care less, or tweeting their chest on that Republican guy who tweeted his chest. So what?
Who cares?
When
you're tweeting your junk or texting your junk,
you know what?
It's a judgment issue we have to question. That's
it was
all.
To his wife. It got out, or to his girlfriend. It's not smart.
It's just not smart. It's a judgment issue we're looking at.
I expect that from a child. I don't expect that from a grown adult. But at the end of the day, look, I don't care.
Yeah. We got time for one more caller really quick. Caller, you're live. Wait. Caller, now you're live on the air.
Okay, maybe not.
Or not. I didn't care that he was tweeting naked pictures of himself to his girlfriend. I cared that he was dumb enough to do it in a way that the media caught on.
I think it's the righteousness, the holier than thou. That kind of bothers me.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, this is Augie, one of the ilk. I just had to call back. Lawrence doesn't understand the purpose of what we fought for in World War II at all.
Well, that's obvious, though.
Now, Augie, are you a World War II vet?
Pardon me?
Did you serve during World War II?
No,
I didn't.
No, okay.
Augie's too young for that.
I did serve 6 years, but the point isn't that I did or didn't serve. Everyone served who honored the country, who supported a just war, which is what World War II really was. But the point is that the people that I knew who had served in World War II all said, wanted to get the damn thing over with and get the crumb bums out of there that were keeping the war going, the worthless people. And it was a war of civilian effort in that regard. We didn't contract potato peeling out to some company like we did in these last wars. So I won't go on and on and on, but this is this man who dismisses other people who he disagrees with and can't honestly conduct a conversation. This is Lawrence.
Yeah.
I mean, such a deceitful man. It's unfortunate. So right. I'm just the ilk calling back.
Thanks, Augie.
Thanks, Augie. And Augie, I think, had a great point. World War II was a much different war from our time in Afghanistan, our time in Iraq, our time in Kuwait, different places we've been.
Was it Rosie the Riveter?
Yeah, I mean,
that mentality.
Coming up, you know, in the near future, you're going to start hearing about this film. I can barely talk about it. I had the opportunity to sit down with a man named Alex Moskowick when I was working at the Sarasota Film Festival about a month ago. And I haven't had a chance to do anything with that interview. I was sick and things have been a little hectic, and I've been in touch with his son. His son is a filmmaker. And he made a documentary that I'm not sure. They're still shopping around film festivals trying to find distributors to where we're going to be able to see it. But the movie is called Kinderblock 66, Return to Buchenwald. And it was taking these men who had been in the concentration camps in Buchenwald, these who were children, one of whom was Elie Wiesel. That's what we were fighting for. We were fighting to save those people. This is a man who lost his parents, his grandmother, his brother. He lost everything. And he went on to live his life. And again, I will get into that. But when you look at World War II and the Holocaust and what was going on versus what we're fighting for now, these are two entirely different wars. You know, Vietnam was a different place. Even Korea was a different place. World War II was something that had to happen no matter what you believe.
Again, we should learn from our mistakes, and apparently we haven't.
And hopefully we would, but we haven't. And real quick, we've got like about just about a minute. We've got not a caller on the air.
Hmm. It's, I mean...
Oh, wait, now...
Sorry to come back.
You guys are killing me with the phones this morning, folks. Caller, really quick. We've got about 30 seconds.
I forgive Augie.
Oh, well, I'm
oh,
sure
yeah, that was totally worth the airtime. Thanks,
Robin,
though, Lawrence. I appreciate it. We'll have Jim Delgado back in the studio with us tomorrow. Henry Raines will be on assignment for at least the rest of the week. And we're going to get out of here, and The Happiest Woman will be coming up next. And real quick, tune in tonight at 8 o'clock for the Sick Mix Show. You'll probably feel a little bit dirty, but you will be entertained.
You're listening to AM 1490, WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
Do you have peace of mind on the water?
You will with SeaTow standing by for you 24/7. Members get free towing, fuel drops, jump starts, ungroundings, and more. Call SeaTow Sarasota today at 941-756-3000.